Hello. Welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I have with me today Sherry Cannell. Sherry is a former model, dancer, and singer who lost her entire career to illness. She's here today to share her inspirational journey with us. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we get going, could you tell us a little bit about your journey?
Oh, you bet. Like you said, I used to sing and dance in musicals and act in commercials, and I was very much a big go-getter. I had my first job at, I was only 10 years old. I took care of horses in a stable, and by the time I was 12, I worked at a pet store, and at 14, I worked at a clothing store, and I went on to get two business degrees and a minor in liberal arts. And wow, there's a lot of things in between there. You want me to talk to you about that?
Let's talk about your personal journey with invisible illness. When did you first start to get signs and symptoms that maybe something was going on with you?
Actually, at 14 years old, my family went to Arkansas to visit my grandparents. And at the time, on the news, they were saying, don't go outside because for some reason, horses and cows were falling over dead from tick bites. And my brother, my older brother, wanted to go fishing really bad. I didn't like fishing, but I liked being with my brother. So I went with him and we put our socks over our pants and put our long sleeves on and thought we were protecting ourselves. But I did sit in the grass for hours at a time watching him fish. And when I came back home, I got a rash from head to toe and nobody knew what it was back then. And from then, that's when it started. I started having chronic pain and chronic headaches and fevers. And I always had the flu or bronchitis or pneumonia. But I kept going. I kept pushing forward. And I wasn't about to give up my life. I continued to sing and dance. And I was a cheerleader and put myself through college, even despite that. And then at 19... that's when I first started having bouts with paralysis. And there were times that I would be in bed for weeks with paralysis and high fevers, and I wasn't able to work. But then I would just have to, the fevers would continue, and I would still have pneumonia or bronchitis or a flu. And I would still, you know how they say, the show must go on, and I continue to sing and dance despite all that.
Wow. So you're facing all these physical challenges, but you're still singing, dancing, going to school, trying to have a career. What were the doctors saying at the time?
Well, at the time, they didn't know for sure what was going on. It does turn out that later on, I found out that I got Lyme disease from the tick bite. But at that time, and we're not going to talk about my age, how long ago that was, but actually, that was before Lyme disease was even discovered. And so that's why the doctors didn't really know what was wrong with me. And I had to get injections for my immune system and medications for, there'd be times when I would be throwing up multiple times, an hour for days and things like that. So they did the best they could with what they knew. But it wasn't until I was in a car accident and got a really bad head and neck and back and jaw injury that about a year and a half later, all of a sudden, I wasn't just dealing with a little bit of paralysis. It actually moved from both of my feet all the way up to my ribs, and I could no longer walk at all. And I still drove a stick shift, if you can believe that. I grabbed my leg, which was paralyzed, and pushed it. This was when one side was paralyzed. I actually had to pick up my leg and push it down on the clutch, and because I was determined, I am getting to work. I love my work. I love my life. I am not giving up. I've dealt with this for 14 years, being sick off and on, and I'm not going to let it get to me now. But at the time I was told probably what happened was in the car accident, I slipped a disc or something. So we had every hope that what was going to happen is I was going to get into that hospital and they were going to figure it out. They were going to give me surgery or whatever needed to be done. And unfortunately, after a week in the hospital, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So from at that point, I still said, this isn't going to stop me. My boss actually came in and visited me and he said, Sherry, you can come back to work anytime, work whatever hours, and I'm going to buy you a wheelchair accessible desk because we want you back. And that was the plan. I was going to spend about 2 weeks, maybe off resting because I was so sick. I couldn't even sit up. I couldn't think of hardly my name. I couldn't function and I had to have help with meals and bathing and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, okay, it doesn't matter if I'm in a wheelchair. I can still sing. I can still work. I can do all these things. And the doctor even came in at one point and said, do you not realize what's going on with you? You're never going to walk again. And I said, but that's okay. I mean, I'm not happy about it, but that's what it is. And that's okay because I can still work. I can still get my master's degree. I was getting ready to get my master's degree and get this really great job. And so that was the plan. But unfortunately, I never got any better. And through some physical therapy, long physical therapy, I did, thankfully, regain the use of my legs. And I can't stand for very long and I can't walk very far, but I'm so thankful for that. But that's not what kept me from working. And people didn't understand that. And a year later, that's when I was finally diagnosed with the Lyme disease from way back when I was 14 years old. And so what had happened was when I was in the hospital, they gave me large doses of steroids, which is very common for MS to take the swelling down in the spinal cord and the brain. But what that did is it shut my immune system down and it allowed the Lyme disease to take over all of my organs and my brain and my entire nervous system and all my cells. So that's why I wasn't getting any better. And that's why the MS was no longer relapsing, remitting. And that's why it's been so severe every day since then.
Sherry, that's such an amazing story of perseverance. How did you keep pushing on?
Well, I didn't know anything any differently, Matt. I mean, I fought my whole life from the time I had Lyme disease until this point. I was accustomed to getting sick and pushing through. So every single week, every single month, I thought, tomorrow I'm going to find the answer. Tomorrow I'm going to find the answer. Tomorrow I'm going to find the answer. And I tried every diet, every medication, every therapy that I could get my hands on. And this many years later, I am still researching, I'm still trying, and I'm still hoping. And that's all that people can do is to continue persevering. And I try to find something good in every day at this point, even if it's just something small. And that's the only way that we can get through it. You do what you can with what you have. And do I get depressed? Do I have pity parties? Yeah, I do. I really do. I mean, not only do I miss being able to sing and dance in musicals, and, you know, right now, who knows where I would be. I'm not interested in being famous, but I could be down at the community center having a blast. But instead, I'm at home going to doctor's appointments, doing therapies, trying to buy my supplements, trying to find something to eat, trying to shower and wash my hair. I mean, people don't realize what a challenge just washing your hair is when you're this sick. I feel like I have the flu every day. I can barely sit up. I can barely speak. I don't normally talk on the phone, maybe to my mom and my dad and my sister once in a while. But it, you know, not everybody is in this position. And I don't want anybody who's listening in who may have MS to think, oh my goodness, this is what's going to happen to me. You know, I do have head injuries. I also have the Lyme disease. There's other things playing a part. And also, when I was pushing myself before all this happened, I wasn't taking good care of myself at all. I didn't eat right. In fact, there were times that I'd eat like a cup of soup. I was anorexic. I had to be anorexic to be skinny enough to do modeling. I would sleep maybe 2 hours a night. And that's not good. For anybody who is dealing with illness and they're up against this, I strongly suggest, looking for ways that you can improve your health. You can have a good diet and watch your stress and manage your schedule. And there's a lot of good things that you can do to get better or manage what you're dealing with and not end up on my road. So anyways, I continued to look and research, and I continue today. And a year after I got sick, I actually met my husband, Wayne. And he didn't know the Sherry before, but he saw my perseverance and he saw, who I am inside and who I am despite being unable to do a few things here and there, unable to ride my horse or work or things like that. He saw who I am, and we all have purpose, and we all are still who we are despite our illnesses. But he saw me struggling really hard with not only my illness, but with getting people to understand what I was going through. Because at this time, even though I used to walk or like to go to church or somewhere to a family get together, or I used a wheelchair, they still didn't understand the horrific fatigue and the cognitive problems and the fevers and the horrible pain and different things. They still didn't get it. They said, now that you can walk, why aren't you at work? And I tried to explain to them, walking didn't have anything to do with working. It's my brain. It's not, I can't even get up and shower and drive myself somewhere and even go, spend 5 minutes at work, let alone, 8 hours or an hour or here. But they didn't get it because they didn't see it. And so my husband said, hey, Sherry, I got an idea. This was right when the internet was starting out. He said, how about I put some of your writings, because I had some writings in my journal and I was printing these up and handing them out to people, trying to get them to understand and stop being so, intentional. They probably had good intentions, but to tell me that I'm just not trying hard enough, me not trying hard enough, that's hurtful. Or saying that I just want to be on vacation. Well, it's not a vacation if you're sick. I mean, doctor's appointments and therapy and things, insurance, blah, blah, blah. It's not a vacation anyway. So he asked me, he said, let's put this up on a website. And what we can do is from now on, I will make you some cards. And when we meet people and they don't get it, don't stand there and waste all your energy and get so sick from trying to explain to them. Just hand them a card and say, check out the website. And we honestly thought that maybe a few people would trickle in here and there, and it would save me some time and energy and honestly severe heartache to have to explain things to people. But much to our surprise, we started getting emails from people around the world saying, oh my goodness, you have put into words exactly what I've been wanting to tell my friends and family. And there were even people that were printing up things from my journal that were giving them to their husbands or giving them to their children who didn't understand their illness. We had one lady who kept encouraging her husband to read this. And he finally did. And the next morning he brought her a cup of tea in bed. It was a nice little lady from England. And we got email from a woman whose daughter had fibromyalgia. And she said, I had no idea. I thought my daughter was just giving up and just being lazy and unmotivated. I cannot believe this. And now that I understand, I am there to support her and help her. And a lot of people think that's coddling somebody, or it's, if I let them have their pity party, then they're just going to wallow in it. No, friends and family, I am here to say that if you come around that person, your loved one, and you say, I am so sorry you're going through this. This is really challenging. What can I do to help? Or how can I be here to support you? That will give them so much strength to fight. And that strength to fight could lead to them getting better. or could lead to them getting to a point where it's manageable. So anyway, at this point, my husband realized, and I realized, that I wasn't the only one going through this. I thought my friends and family were strange, and they were just reacting poorly to me. And it wasn't anything personal, unfortunately. It seems that that's just a response when people can't see what you're going through. They may see the outside repercussions of it, but they can't see the brain injury. They can't see the spinal cord eaten up from the MS. They can't necessarily see that. So, you know, the old adage, you know, see it to believe it. And so I kept thinking, what term can I give this that will make people understand just in one little sentence? And I sat there and I went, oh, I know exactly what it is. I have an invisible disability. When I was using a wheelchair, people were understanding. They knew. They understood what I was going through because they could see it. But as soon as I started to walk again, they could no longer see it. And now they don't get it. And that's when invisible disabilities was born, the term. And nobody was using it on the internet. I'd never heard it before. And my husband developed a passion for not only me, but for other people living with different illnesses and pain and injuries that people don't understand. And that's when he founded the Invisible Disabilities Association.
We're talking to Sherry Cannell. You just mentioned that your husband, Wayne, founded the Invisible Disabilities Association. Could you talk to us a little bit more about what that association is and what people would expect if they visited the website?
Oh, you bet. The Invisible Disabilities Association is there to bring support, and actually their mission is to encourage, educate, and connect people and organizations touched by illness, pain, and disability around the globe. And they do this through awareness, education, and support through their websites. They have pamphlets, articles, radio and television interviews, events, programs. They had the Brain Ideas Symposiums for a couple of years, which were actually incredible, which is incredible. Experts came around and talked about the brain, not only for people with illness, but everyone. And they have, every year, they have the Invisible Disabilities Week online, which is a great way for people around the world to get involved and to bring awareness to illness and support one another and tell their stories. And they have the Invisible Disabilities Community, which is on a really cool platform called Inspire, where they can meet other people. They have meetups, they have social media, they have dozens of YouTube videos featuring personal stories, other organizations, special guest speakers, conferences and events. And they highlight other people's stories. It's just an incredible support system of resources. And every year they have what's called the IDA Awards Gala. And they give awards to people, individuals, organizations, and businesses that are making a difference for people with disabilities. And it's a great night for awareness. And it's just a blast.
Well, we certainly thank Wayne and the great work that he's doing at Invisible Disabilities Association. I noticed on the IDA website, which we'll share with my audience, that there's a book. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there is a book that the organization has and distributes. It's called But You Look Good. And I know a lot of people sometimes say, hey, don't you want to look good? Well, of course, we all want to look good. But let me tell you what this book really means. It's a compilation of my writings from the journals from the very beginning of when I became ill and unable to work and take care of myself, and people didn't understand. I started keeping track of some of the things that people would tell me. That was not encouraging. And then I would come up with things that were encouraging and not in a negative way. A lot of people are trying to be encouraging. But what this book does is, first of all, it shares about invisible disabilities and why you might not understand what the person is going through with their fatigue or their pain or their brain injury or their illness. And it gives them a little bit of a different perspective. And to be honest with you, I mean, it took me years and years to write this because my brain isn't functioning and I had to try to think outside of myself and look into the situation. And it took four editors to edit my stuff because I could write the same thing over and over. And then my husband took all of these writings and he compilated into a book. But it basically, the first section, it talks about illness and pain and how you can be better understanding. And then it talks about, hey, what are some things that a lot of people say that might not be encouraging, and explains why. That way that person, you know, I might have a friend who's constantly saying, oh, you can do it. You just need to work harder. You're not in that much pain. It's not that bad. They might think they're helping by minimizing the situation, but it's not. When you're going through something like that, you don't want pity, but you certainly want people to get what you're going through. And so it helps. And then the next section is, here are some ways to be encouraging. These are some supportive ways. And what to say. Because a lot of times I've had people tell me, you know, I just don't know what to say to you. And the bottom line is, really, why not you? People just need to listen, maybe, a little bit. And not that I want to tell my story over and over again. I want to get it over with, move on, and let's just have a regular friendship relationship and enjoy fun movies or whatever people do. But it gives them some ideas what to say, what not to say. And then the last part is some ways to help, you know, simple ways. If your friend or family member is saying, gosh, I'm just really having a hard time getting to the grocery store, something that might be easy is when you're already at the store, you can call them and say, I'm already at the store. It's not an inconvenience for me. What kind of pick up and drop off for you? You know, simple things like that if they need help. Some people don't. Some people want help. Some people don't. Some people need it. Some people don't. So anyway, it's really awesome. The organization, Invisible Disabilities Association, has distributed over 30,000 copies of the book around the world. And again, oh my goodness, the emails that have come in saying relationships have been reunited and people better understand and the people living with the illness know that they can just hand somebody a book and say, hey, here's some great ways to be supportive and not have to worry about that hurdle of explaining everything. So, and then also, of course, if you purchase it on the website, all proceeds go to the Invisible Disabilities Association there and their work.
That's an amazing story. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to us with similar questions and concerns, and to know that there's a resource out there that addresses all those concerns is so impactful.
The bottom line is we have to have our relationships to keep fighting. You know, we need, everybody needs friends, everybody needs family. And so these resources are a great way to reunite friends and family and get that support that you need.
Do you know how many people have come up to me and said, the worst thing you can say to a person is, but you look great? Have you ever had a similar experience?
Exactly. And that's why the name is called, But You Look Good. and you know what? I'll be honest with you, Matt. A lot of people, they want to be encouraging by saying, hey, you look great. So you must be doing really well. And that's their intention. And I've actually had friends who've come to me after years after the book became available and said, you know what, Sherry, I still don't get why you don't want to look good. Like, what are you talking about? Everybody wants to look their best. Everybody wants to feel their best. Everybody, especially, you know, us girls, you know, we don't want to be seen. And I'm so glad this is not a video interview, by the way. but we want to look our best. And if I get out of, my husband takes me to the restaurant, I make the effort to comb out my hair and put on a little makeup. And guess what? I get out my pajamas for the first time in the week. So I want to look my best. That's not what it is. It's in their minds, they're saying, I cannot believe this, Matt. I can't believe what you're saying. I can't believe you're having this challenge because to me, you look like you're fine. Or you don't look like you're sick, Sherry. You know, a lot of times when people have a virus, their face is too red, puffy, and things like that. That doesn't necessarily happen with MS. You know, you might look tired if somebody's really tuned into you. They might see the difference between how you were before, or how you are now. But, you know, most of us living with chronic illness don't necessarily look like we have a chronic illness. So the idea is not to judge by what you see, but listen to what the person has to say.
Sherry, what advice would you give to others out there living with invisible disabilities?
Well, I say the first thing is we all know, we have been told, don't judge by a book by its cover, right? Unfortunately, we still do that. I mean, everyone does that. And we'd all be better off if we weren't doing that. Whether somebody is using a wheelchair or not, we can't judge who can do this and who can't do that. We just need to listen and don't make assumptions. I mean, let's not put everyone in a box. Not everyone with MS has to use a wheelchair, or not everyone with MS is unable to work. Everybody is different. It's just like with the autism, they've got a great spectrum. Each illness has a spectrum. Just because one person has one thing, let's not put them in a box. Let's just sit down and listen to them. And guess what? When I talk about my illness with somebody, I like to just talk about it and get it over with and just move on and have life. And don't minimize what somebody's going through because you can't see it. The most important thing is to believe them. I mean, when you believe them and they know that you are on their side, that gives them strength to fight harder, not to give up more, but to fight harder. And just love them and offer them help if they need it. Some people need it. Some people don't want it. It just depends. And so, you know, when you're living with an invisible disability or an illness or injury that's debilitating, everybody's different. Again, some people have good days, some bad days. Some people have more good days, some have more bad days. Some people, like myself, had good and bad days for a really long time. And now, every day, I'm affected. But we all have to do what we can with what we have. And remember that even though, yes, my identity was based on who I was on that stage, and who I was in front of the camera, and who I was at work. But who you are, who I am, is not what we do. We are who we are. It's who we, it's what we believe. It's how we love. And be you and do what you can. And we have to just do what we can. And the biggest thing is to keep fighting, keep researching, looking for new therapies and doctors. And do your best to watch what you eat and you breathe. And find something every day. And this is really hard when you're sick every day. You know, everything is so overwhelming. Just getting up to go to the bathroom is difficult. Getting up to get some food is difficult. And so it's so easy to get into that rut of seeing all the negative because it's so much. So I have to intentionally find something that I'm grateful for. I have to intentionally find joy. If I have to go to YouTube and turn on a funny puppy video or whatever it takes to make me laugh that day, or find my happy place. You know, some people can go to the beach. I can't go to the beach, but I might be able to go to the pool once in a while and close my eyes and pretend I'm in Hawaii. listen to great music or a funny movie, but find your purpose in how you are today. Don't give up on getting well, but find your purpose, because everybody has a purpose, whether it's a blog or reaching out to other people or doing crafts or artwork or volunteering or whatever you can do. And a lot of times we lose our community. Our friends and family may fall away because they don't understand or they don't believe or they just can't handle the difficulty. So you have to find a new support group, whether it's online or in person, and develop new relationships.
We're talking to Sherry Cannell about how invisible disabilities changed her life. Sherry, I understand that there's a campaign running right now. Could you tell us a little bit about that campaign?
Oh, absolutely. The Invisible Disabilities Association has a campaign that's going throughout the year, and it's called I Am Invisible No More. And it's really cool because you know, I'm telling my story today, but not everybody has the opportunity to tell their story. And this gives people the opportunity to tell their story. They can submit a video about their story, and they can talk about the things that they've learned and the trials and the triumphs, and how their friends and family can better support them and be encouraging to them. They can give, you know, all kinds of great messages to bring more awareness to people who are living with invisible disabilities or invisible illnesses. And the contest portion of the campaign is going on right now, and the voting for the videos ends on March 16th. So you want to get your video in right away. And I know a lot of people say, ah, I don't know how to do a video. I wouldn't even know what to say. If you go to the website, invisibledisabilities.org, you can find the page right there for the campaign. And they've got a great video from Jeff Stainbrooke. He's an award-winning producer, and it just gives you some ideas on what to talk about and some simple ideas of just, you know, this isn't about having the greatest software production. Just pick up your phone and tell your story and give your message. So what's really cool about this is everybody will have the opportunity throughout the year, but if you want to get that, be part of the contest, you want to get it in right away, and there's going to be 25 winners in the contest.
Sherry, again, if people want to enter that contest and submit a video, what was that website address again?
It's the Invisible Disabilities Association at invisibledisabilities.org.
And we'll make sure that we share those web links on our podcast notes. So please read the podcast notes to learn more about Sherry, the Invisible Disabilities Association, and the campaign that's going on right now. Sherry, I can't thank you enough for joining the program today. Your story is so inspirational, and I've learned a lot.
Thank you, Matt. I thank you so much for doing the show and for helping other people. You're amazing.
Sherry, we think you're amazing too. We want to thank you and your husband, Wayne, for all the work you do for people living with invisible disabilities. Thank you again for joining our show. She's Sherry Cannell. I'm Matt Cavallo. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. We look forward to bringing you another inspirational story soon.